You're listening to the Tilehurst End Podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
Hello and welcome to the Tilehurst End Podcast, sponsored by ZCZ Films. I'm your host, Mark Mayo, and this week I am delighted to bring you our latest podcast interview of the lockdown period, this time with first team defender Tom McIntyre. Tom, who joined the club in his very early years, about six or seven as he was, as he came into the academy and stayed there all the way through until making his first team debut against Rotherham last year. And it was quite an interesting debut, as we discuss, as he sustained quite a serious injury in that. But he's been playing again this season and has been in and out the team a little bit on the bench and with injuries and stuff as well. His injury clearing up just before the lockdown period ended, so he'll be back in the first team squad for the resumption of the championship. We discussed things with his teammates, to his time supporting the club as he went home and away with Reading in his early years, and now on the pitch as one of those first team heroes that Reading fans have certainly taken to. So without further ado, please welcome Tom McIntyre to the Tilehurst End.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Rs!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Tom McIntyre, welcome to the Tilehurst End. As we were just talking off air, the weird moment, we hopefully would be able to do these sort of interviews in person at the moment, but as it is, a nice chat about what was a very interesting scenario. So how's it going, mate?
Yes, mate, thanks for having me. Yeah, no, I'm all good, mate. It's a bit strange, isn't it, doing a podcast over the phone, but yeah, here we are.
Yeah, absolutely, and we're finding new ways to keep ourselves amused. And before we get on to all the football and the playing, I suppose to one extent this is the football, the first question I have to ask is your secret to the FIFA success that you've been having during the lockdown. How's it been doing all that sort of stuff?
To be fair, I don't know whether that's the right word to describe it as a success, losing in the second round of the quarantine cup. But I did my best, but I don't know, I think against the pro I was never going to win. But it was all a bit of fun and that, and I think people sort of got behind it and saw it for what it was, as a bit of fun and like raising money for a good cause and stuff. But it kept me busy during the start of quarantine, so no, it was, I enjoyed it. Yeah,
it's interesting the sort of things that people do latch onto in this period, and that certainly was one of the, you know, overall one of the success stories as well. And yourself as well, it's a, you know, as a young player, it's probably a bit of a strange time to have the, you know, your career effectively put on hold as it is. How was it at the start of lockdown then with the training and what sort of, you know, what sort of things were you doing sort of day to day to keep yourself fit and everything like that?
It was sort of doubly frustrating for me as well, because I'd just been out injured. Literally, the week that I was meant to be back training was the week we went into lockdown, and sort of we all had to be at home and stuff. So that was sort of another thing that made me even more frustrated, because it had been such a long time since I'd trained with the boys, and I was sort of looking forward to that. And then, yeah, to be told you've just got to stay in for the next sort of the foreseeable future was a bit of a shock. But I don't know, I found it tough at first, because you obviously don't have a routine. But I think once you get into a routine and stuff, I think it's just sort of, I don't know, it's not been too bad, to be fair. There's people who have it a lot worse than I do, so I just got to be grateful for what I have, really. But I think, yeah, like I said, that was the main thing, is just having a routine that you do every day, because you could just sit about and be a couch potato all day if you wanted to. But yeah, it's important to get those routines going. Yeah.
And are you now back at Bearwood training on how's that working? Is that kind of an individual basis you're going in?
So now, as of Monday, we're in groups. So the defenders will be at a certain time, and then the midfielders will be at another time, and then the strikers another time as well. I'm sort of all spaced out throughout the day. But it's great to be back training with the boys and stuff, and even just seeing them and being able to just sort of have a little chat with them and stuff and catch up, because going from being with them every day to then not seeing them at all is a bit strange. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff we missed out on, but no, it's been great to get on the grass again, because there's only sort of so much you can do on your own. You can obviously do a lot of running and that, but it's never the same as getting on a pitch and training with your teammates, sort of thing.
Yeah, I suppose it must be, it's unique as a defender as well, because the nature of your job is you're dealing with the person and the opposite team. You can't just, you know, have a few pot shots at goal, can you? So it must be weird to have to deal with that.
Yeah, definitely it is, because at the minute we're not actually contact, it's not contact training at the minute, so it's a lot of passing drills and sort of like we're doing patterns of play. But yeah, like you say, it is hard as a defender because I just want to tackle someone really, and that's my sort of, that's what I love doing, is tackling people and heading the ball and stuff. So no, it is a bit frustrating, yeah, but everyone's in the same boat, aren't they? So yeah.
What positives have you been able to take from this period? Have you had a chance to maybe do a bit more like video analysis, maybe, you know, get a bit more of a tactical insight into what's going on? Have you been able to take anything like that?
It would just be sort of like injury prevention exercises and stuff, and like running and keeping fit. And I feel like I've really sort of, I feel strong and I feel good in my body and stuff. And I think that's important with me because over the years I've picked up a few injuries and stuff, and often during the summer holidays when you're usually off, you obviously do try and stick to the program as much as you can, but when you're away on holiday or whatever, the hotels sometimes don't have the stuff that you need. But at home I've been able to sort of get enough of what I need to get those sort of exercises done that prevent injuries and stuff from happening. And my dad was able to help me because he has a van. He was able to pick up one of the bikes from the training ground, so I brought that home. And then a bit of the gym equipment and stuff. So I think the main thing really is just sort of doing all of those sort of like leg strengthening exercises and stuff, which has been massive for me because I've obviously had so much time, you can really focus on that sort of thing. Yeah,
because it was an ankle injury you had as we were sort of, you know, playing before lockdowns or whatever. Is that you saying that's all cleared up now, basically?
Yeah, that was the other thing as well, because I would have started back playing the week that we went into lockdown. But as with any injury and sort of a sports team, they try and get you back as quick as they can. And maybe in a perfect world, you probably need a bit longer to recover from an ankle injury like that. So it's given me an extra sort of, it's given me a few more extra months for the ankle to heal as well. So in that sense, it's sort of a blessing in disguise, really. And also, if I jump back into the team training then, I'd have been behind a bit with in terms of fitness and stuff. But obviously now we're all going back at the same time, we're all sort of coming back on a level playing field sort of
absolutely.
So no, I do remember, yeah, now that you mentioned it, that was, I've obviously forgot about that positive because that was obviously a long time ago. But yeah, no, that is a massive one. Just give me a bit of extra time to heal.
Yeah, I suppose things that happened at the start of lockdown do feel like they're about 5 years ago now, I don't know.
Oh, no, yeah, honestly, yeah, nightmare.
And you said about going in and training and stuff. Have you, I understand that it's Bearwood now that we're kind of using rather than Hogwood, the old training ground. What, have you had a good chance to look around the new training ground? What's your sort of impressions of it?
Oh, no, I love it, to be fair. It's something that when we've always gone to, well, as a youngster, you obviously go to other academies and play against their youth teams, which is always at the, or usually at the training grounds. And our training ground's obviously great at Hogwood as well, but you see some of these amazing state-of-the-art facilities that they've got at other clubs, and you always think, God, it'd be cool if we had that, or if we could get that swimming pool or that big gym at our place. So now to sort of have stuff like that and have it as a state-of-the-art facility is just going to be great for not only the first team, but all the teams, the women's team and then the academy. And I think just for Reading as a club and as a whole, I think it's going to be brilliant, and the benefits of that will be endless. Yeah,
it's one of those things that as fans we don't get to see. But I've been to Hogwood a few times. It's nice, but it's kind of, it feels a bit temporary, if you know what I mean. Whereas Bearwood hopefully is a, you know, permanent structure now, really, isn't it?
Yeah, people often say that who visit and stuff. They say that, but I don't know. For us, I know maybe for people that are visiting, it seems temporary. But for us, that's sort of our home from home sort of thing. So it's got everything it needs, and it's brilliant. The pitches are unbelievable. The ground staff are top draw. But yeah, as I say, the state of the art facilities that are now going to be at Bearwood is just going to help us no end. Yeah.
Absolutely. And in terms of your, you know, getting back in now with the teammates and everything, obviously there's going to be a lot of catching up to do, although in terms of being in the dressing room kind of like you would typically is going to be a bit different for a few weeks and months now. How has it been you know, staying in contact with the other teammates? Have you had, you know, Zoom calls together, been able to keep in contact quite a lot?
Yeah, we actually have a group chat, so a lot of talking goes on that. And we had a few meetings over the first few weeks with the manager and stuff on Zoom calls. So yeah, it's a bit awkward when there's sort of 20 to 30 lads all on the same Zoom call. It's a bit loud and noisy, but no, it was good to like catch up with them then. But there's also been a group of us that have done a pub sort of quiz on a Friday. That stopped now, but for the first few weeks of lockdown, we did a quiz every Friday, so the loser would have to do the quiz the next week. So no, that was a good bit of fun, and we could all catch up every week. And those are the sort of things that you need during this time. It's something to look forward to, really, because at the start it sort of seems like you're just going through life with no sort of purpose. But that was just a little something that sort of gave us something to look forward to. Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. I must say myself, it seems like I'm talking to some of my friends much more now than I ever was before, really.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely. I think that's the same with a lot of people. And it's the same with sort of your family. And I know this is a bit of a different topic, but being with your family and stuff, I've never spent so much time with my family because we've obviously been at home non-stop. Everyone has busy lives and stuff. So I think everyone's got to sort of look at it as a bit of a positive in that sense, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Who's coming bottom of those pub quizzes then? Which sort of players are struggling on the general knowledge?
To be fair, the first quiz I jumped in, I lost, which was pretty embarrassing because I didn't actually play a lot. I didn't do the quiz for the first few weeks. I then jump in and I lose straight away, which is a bit frustrating. But who else would give me a run for money down the bottom? Matt Miazgar. Me and him have a little thing going on, and I reckon I'm brighter than he is, but he reckons he's brighter than I am. So I think me and him would sort of come pretty far down the pack, alongside Liam Moore, to be fair. He's down there as well, I reckon. But it'd be a tough one between us three, I reckon.
A lot of centre-backs there. Is there some sort of theme between spending your time heading a ball and jumping into people?
Yeah, maybe it has an effect on you, I don't know.
takes a certain type, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, just a bit of one serious question before I was going to talk about teammates and everything like that in a second, but one serious question is the wage deferral has now been agreed for, I think it's 3 months now. I presume yourself as a sort of younger player wasn't too much involved, correct me if I'm wrong of course, but I'd imagine that maybe the older players and everything like that, what was your sort of experience of that being dealt with?
To be fair, that was all sorted, as you say, by the senior players, and I think Liam Moore has done a great job at liaising with Nigel Howe and the gaffer as well. And I think he's been brilliant for us as players because he's been our voice sort of thing and spoke to the PFA a lot and stuff. But what he's got sorted is good for the club and us as players. So we've all got to thank him for that, I think, because, he's done a really good job as our captain. He's been our voice and, I think it's been great of him, yeah.
No, fair enough. Well, as I say, we'll talk about a couple of teammates then. I want to throw just a handful of names at you that I'm quite interested to get your take on, because I've seen as when we're playing normally and everything like that, I see little snippets on your Instagram and everything of inside the dressing room and the characters in there and everything. And what have you found as, particularly as a young player, of playing alongside and being in the dressing room alongside Charlie Adam? Because he's a player who, you know, he's been there, done it, bought the T-shirt and everything like that. He's also in the media a lot. Is he the wise old sort of almost like the grandpa of the group in a way?
Yeah, he is. Well, I think that might be a bit harsh. He wouldn't like that. he's a top guy. And he's as you say, he's got so much knowledge of the game and been around for a long time that I think for a player like myself who's young and coming through, I think that's just invaluable to me, really. And I really feel like I can sort of speak to him and he'll give me advice on stuff. But also, he doesn't take himself too seriously as well, which sometimes you get sort of older pros who come down and they might sort of, I don't know, sometimes maybe a young player says something to them, they might take it in a wrong way. But I can have a real good laugh and a joke with Charlie and stuff, and he takes it the right way, you know. So, he's a really good guy, and he's really funny as well, to be fair. I think some of the things he does in the dressing room, do make us laugh.
Yeah, no, I get that sense a lot. Particularly, I see a lot of golf swings and golf chat going on in the dressing room as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that, golf's a big part of the dressing room, to be fair. Everyone's on it, as well as darts as well. We're into our darts too.
And another player I want to talk about who is probably on the opposite end, if you know, Charlie Adam in the media and everything like that, we very rarely hear of Ovi Ejaria and what he, you know, I don't really see him too much on social media. I don't even know if he has an Instagram account, for example. What's he kind of, is it that kind of understatement maybe more with him?
Yeah, he's just a really a quiet guy, really. Really nice fella as well. But yeah, he's not like outspoken or anything. He keeps himself to himself, and he's quite a private guy. He speaks to a lot. I'd say he probably speaks to a lot of the younger players more than he speaks to like senior players, you know. Because I think I've had quite a few conversations with him and stuff. Because I sit next to him on the coach on the way up to away games. So I've got to know him quite well. And yeah, he's a really nice guy. But yeah, he doesn't. He's just a very quiet guy, I think. But I think that sort of adds to the magic of him as a player, though. Because he is so quiet and sort of introverted, like off the pitch, when you see him on the pitch and how sort of, you know, dominant and like just classy is on the pitch, I think that's amazing in itself, really.
Yeah, it is that kind of, the way of playing his game is kind of the most extroverted and artistic, isn't it? Which is, as you say, kind of the opposite.
Exactly, yeah. I think that adds to it, yeah.
And tell me about Ayub Masika, who's obviously only been at the club for, you know, obviously only really a few weeks before obviously the lockdown began. But the thing that we noticed as fans, I don't know if you noticed it in the dressing room, was just the Kenyan following that just emerged overnight, basically, as we signed someone. How has he been to sort of, you know, be training against and in the dressing room?
To be fair, on the pitch, I haven't really got to know him too well because he came in and I was injured at the time. I haven't actually trained with him. Or I trained with him once or twice, sorry. He came in just before I got injured. But off the pitch, again, he's a nice guy and he's got to know all the lads really well and stuff. But yeah, he wears some dodgy gear, though. I'd say that to him. He wears some dodgy gear. But you'd never know how massive he is in Kenya, just talking to him, because he's really down to earth and that. And that's the same about all the lads, really. There's not one player in the dressing room that I dislike or isn't a nice person. I think everyone in the dressing room is like real nice guys. But yeah, his gear's awful, but he's a good guy. That's what I'd say.
I'm always curious when it comes to footballers, what constitutes awful gear? Because as you know, on social media and stuff, there's quite a lot of what I would describe as questionable material. But then, what do you guys consider that? It might be completely different.
He's worn some dodgy stuff, and it's all nice, like good material, expensive gear. But there was one day he came in like a trench coat, like Inspector Morse or something. I don't know. It was really strange, and it was like a full black trench coat, and none of the lads were having that at all. But yeah, just loud, like bright stuff. Not for me, but I suppose you could say he pulls it off, and it's a different kind of sort of fashion, I suppose. But yeah, he's himself, I suppose. At least he's not afraid to wear what he wants, because sometimes you'll pull out a bright top or something and think, oh, I might not wear that because I'll get grilled for that. but clearly he isn't worried about that, so fair play to him.
No, absolutely. If you can style it out, then crack on, sort of thing. And one other player I wanted to mention specifically, because this is someone who I feel like, you know, as fans we appreciate him a lot, but as a personality, I think he kind of goes under the radar a little bit, and is actually, in my opinion, maybe one of the most important players in the dressing room. And that's Andy Yeardom, who perhaps, you know, as I say, a bit low-key outside of the game. But inside, is he actually, quite a big character, actually?
Yeah, he is. He's a real big character. And he's a leader as well in the dressing room. And I think you see that with his performances as well. He'll give his 110%. You sometimes see him, I've been on the bench a few times and seen him 20 minutes in, and he looks like he's blowing out his backside. It looks like that, but literally he'll just keep up the same work rate throughout the whole 90 minutes. And yeah, it's amazing, to be fair, how hard he works. But yeah, in the dressing room, he's a strong voice and a strong character, and someone, yeah, a senior player who I'd look up to myself. But yeah, he's a top guy off the pitch as well. He'll always have time to talk to you and stuff, and he's obviously had a lot of experience with his journey coming up through non-league and stuff. So yeah, slightly different to other players in the team. But yeah, he might be the one to sort of pull you to the side and maybe just speak to you quietly, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I suppose, as well what I was thinking earlier on, in terms of, you know, you come across as someone who probably doesn't come across as like starstruck or overwhelmed or anything like that. But did you ever feel, when you were first in the senior dressing room, a bit like, oh God, what am I doing here? Sort of a bit starstruck, players around me that you've heard of on the TV, yeah, that sort of thing?
Yeah. At first, it is strange. I'd be lying if I said it wasn't. And I think often young players and stuff make out that they're not starstruck or like that doesn't affect them. But yeah, definitely. When I first started training with the first team and played for the first team, it was a bit strange for myself. Not in a bad way. I think it actually helps, really, because you've got that sort of fear factor, in a sense, of the players that you've watched growing up and stuff, and you know about all what they've done in their careers, and you're trying to prove to them what you can do, if that makes sense. But yeah, at first it is really strange, because obviously you watch these players like G-Mac and Gunt and that, and Liam Moore. I've watched them for years, you know, since they've been at Reading, and I've been to see them play at Wembley and stuff, and then yeah, to be playing with them, it's amazing, really. I wouldn't say that to their faces, though. I hope they don't listen.
Well, we'll do a tiny little edit for Twitter and put it out like a 45-second bit. So maybe I'll put out a bit where you know you can say something where you're really good, and then we'll put that out on social media. Speaking of which, actually, who's the worst one to face in training? Out of, you know, whether it's an attacker or a midfielder or whatever, who is the one that you kind of dread, thinking, are they going to give me either a real physical day or just going to tire me out?
It's probably got to be Ovi Ejaria, to be fair, because you obviously see what he does on a pitch on a Saturday, and then when you get in training against him, I think he probably doesn't embarrass people as much as he does on a Saturday, because people know what he's like and know how good he is. People tend to sort of stand off him slightly in training, or I do anyway, because you know what he can do. I'm sometimes a bit wary of getting nutmegged by him or something, but I'll probably go with him, to be fair.
And who is the... You are allowed to say yourself for this one, but who is the funniest man in the dressing room?
It's got to be Charlie or Sam Baldock, I'd say. Got to be.
Yeah, Sam Baldock did that Instagram like joke thing for the club, didn't he? When he like called people up and everything. Was that sort of thing that he's good at doing, that sort of comedy sort of routine?
He's just got like clever banter and like witty banter, you know. Like, he'll come out with comments that you won't ever think of, and sometimes it takes me a few seconds to pick up on it because he's that quick. But yeah, he's just a funny bloke. He can make a joke out of anything, really. So yeah, it's got to be him or Charlie. Just, I think Scottish people in general just have something about them that makes them funny.
I suppose with Charlie as well, he's got that sort of level of authority as well, and maybe it's that deadpanness as well that he's got to him.
Yeah, for sure. It might be a bit of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a bit about the your sort of playing days and everything like that then, because you managed to come into the youth team at a really young age. And what was the sort of circumstances of the club effectively signing you up? Because you must have, it was sort of, you were almost too young to be in a sort of scouting sense, I'd imagine. Yeah.
So when I played originally for my like Sunday league team, if you will, I played a year up just from the start. I can't remember why. I think I went to train with my age group, and they could maybe see that I was like a bit bigger and stronger than some of the other lads, so just pushed me up an age group straight away. So yeah, for the first few years of my like footballing journey, I was playing a year up, and then I remember there was a scout came to watch my team play in a tournament or something, a little like five-a-side tournament, and they picked three of the lads to go and train, and I wasn't one of them. And my manager spoke to the guy after and said, like, mate, you've not taken Tom, and I consider him one of my best players. This is what he's told me. And so they did give me a chance in the end, and I went along with these other three from my team. And I trained, I think it was every Friday, I trained down at the Dome. But every few weeks you'd get a letter to say whether you'd been kept on or not for the next sort of 6 week cycle.
Mm.
So my mum and dad would always prepare, well, I can't remember this, but they'd always prepare me for me to get a letter that said, oh, we don't want you to carry on. But luckily, yeah, that never came. And then it got to sort of, I think I was maybe seven, and they started obviously signing the boys in my age group, in the year above, who were eight at the time. So you can join, I think, under eight it was at the time. And it came to me signing, and for whatever reason, they didn't realise that I was a year below. So I then had to just do the same what I was doing for another year, and then I did get signed up in the end.
Yeah.
So I think, looking back on it, I probably, from an early age, playing up an age group probably helped me a lot, I'd say. But yeah, that's where the journey started.
And were you a defender at this point, or was it just kind of, was there no real positioning you were kind of favouring to? When was it defending became your sort of thing?
Yeah, I'd always sort of be further towards the back. I'd often sometimes play midfield in like five-a-side and stuff. But again, at that age, there's not really a structure to the team.
Yeah.
But I think it was either centre back or like just in the middle, like defensive midfield, really.
And what sort? And can you remember whether it's, you know, probably not like 7-year-old, but maybe like 13, 15, 17-year-old you get into? What sort of players were that you remember maybe playing with or playing against that have made it to the game as well now?
We've got loads, to be fair. There's Mason Mount, Declan Rice, Sancho. I remember playing Marcus Rashford when I was under 15s. Who else have we got? Cool, there's quite a few, to be fair. You see, it's brilliant, to be fair, because I'm at that age now where I'm obviously a bit older, and you see a lot of the boys who are playing at my age now, I've played against before, which is brilliant to see. But there'd be a huge list of players that I've played against who are now playing. But I always buzz off it, to be fair, when I see lads I've played against playing in first teams and stuff, no matter whether it's in the conference, in League 2, League 1, whatever it is. I think it's great when I see players that I've played against playing in first teams and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Who was the one that you can remember then who maybe, you know, you could admit maybe tore you apart or something like that, or was just, you thought, this guy's going to be really good?
I remember it was always the Chelsea team. At this point, Declan Rice was still playing with Chelsea. I don't know why they released him, to be fair, because he was always one of the best players in their team.
Mm.
So they had Mason Mount playing attacking midfield. They had Trevor Chaloba playing at the back with Dejon Sterling. They had obviously Declan in midfield, Callum Hudson-Odoi, and then there was another few players in their team. But whenever we played them, you'd always know that you were going to be in for a game, and you'd probably say they were the best team growing up. But yeah, it'd probably be maybe Mason was up there. Yeah, I'd probably say Mason was one of the best I played against. Yeah.
Yeah, to be fair, that team at under 17 would probably give most like League One teams now a good run for their money, wouldn't they? That's an immense level of talent in that team.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. There was also, to be fair, at that age, there was also Eddie Nketiah, who plays for, he was at Chelsea at that point.
Oh, yeah,
He's now at Arsenal, but he was in that team as well. And I remember, yeah, they used to be so good, yeah.
And then, you know, you managed to make the transition yourself from academy to, I suppose it's kind of academy to reserve and then to senior, effectively, isn't it? But
yeah.
What did you find was the big sort of difference that you had to make the step up from youth to senior football?
I think it's just like the physicality of it all, and the importance on a game, and the pressure that's on you to perform. And I think you don't realise that straight away. It's when you're around the environment more and you see the stresses that it puts people under in the team and in the staff, you know, and you realise how important it all is. Because I think growing up, you always see it as being amazing and you watch football all the time, but you don't see that other side of it, you know. And you don't ever realise it until you're actually in it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and I suppose there being no more school as well must have been a kind of weird thing in a sense, is it, when you're going from mixing training with revising and everything like that to thinking, yeah, this is now just my full-time job.
Yeah, but to be fair, that was what I wanted to do from when I was sort of, when I started playing football. And then, yeah, when you finally get to that point where you think, right, this is my job now and this is what I'll do full-time, I think that's just brilliant, really, because you can just put all your focus into that.
Absolutely. And then we've got the the typical question I would ask of your debut, obviously the Rotherham game.
Yeah.
The typical question I would ask is, what are your memories from that? But with you, I've got to ask, have you got any memories from that? Because for those who may not remember, you, what was the official injury that you suffered during that game?
I fractured my frontal sinus, which is, in layman's terms, it's your the front of your skull, basically.
And that was, is that okay now? Have you still got any kind of remnants of that injury in your head now?
I've just got a big whopping scar down the side of my head, which you can probably see, you see it most of the time. When my hair's longer, it sort of covers it up. And you can also sort of feel a little two screws in the top of my head. But apart from that, it's all good, touch wood. But yeah, it was a worrying time, that, yeah.
You're just still setting the metal detectors off as you go on your flights, then.
To be fair, the surgeon said that to me in the when I first went to see him. He did say that this is a special kind of material that doesn't get set off in metal detectors. But yeah, I do get asked that all the time.
And that, obviously, you know, the overwhelming feeling of that debut was, you know, must have been immense. I've read that you had all your family up there as well. How was the nerves the night before that game?
Yeah, to be fair, this is a bit cliche, but it's all, like, before is just all a bit of a blur, really, because it was such a quick, it felt like, not that I was chucked in, but there was no one else who could play at that time. I think we had loads of the centre-backs were out injured, and I sort of just had to just chuck myself into it, really, but I think that's the best thing that could have happened, because, as I say, I didn't have too much time to think about. I think it may have been, I remember I might have trained on the Wednesday or Thursday, and I remember Liam pulled out with a calf strain or something. And then I was looking over, and he's like walking off, and all the lads are like slapping me on the head and that, going, "Oh, you're going to start, you're going to start." And then Shawnee said something to me like, "Don't be nervous, it's not that bad." But yeah, the nerves did start from as soon as I seen Liam go in, because I knew that was probably going to be me playing. But it's just those sort of few days, and then the few days after were just the best in my life, really. Yeah.
Yeah, it must have been surreal to come out, and as someone, you've said before that you used to follow the team home and away, to come out and be like the one clapping the away fans and everything. It must feel, yeah, to sort of be the one you're watching, in a sense, isn't it?
Yeah, it was just it was unbelievable. I can't even describe it, really. It was just something that, I think about it all the time as well, because although I did obviously have the nasty head clash and that, all I think about from that game is just good memories and that time. So I'm so grateful for it all sort of happening like that. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll talk about your sort of supporting club time, like as a fan, in a minute. But as you went into the next summer, it was kind of that summer under José Gomez was a really quiet summer. In terms of transfer activity and everything, there were a lot of academy players being involved. There was a three at the back as well. This kind of a confident time for you, where you thought there's a really good chance I'm going to be involved here?
Yeah, I did. I did, because obviously there wasn't any sort of incomings in terms of signings and stuff. Primarily the team was filled with 23s players, which for me and all of us youngsters was brilliant, because you're always looking to get your chance at some stage. But I think as a young player, you do realise that that's maybe not what happens all the time, and that players were going to come in. But yeah, it was great to be away. There was so many players that maybe wouldn't have gone on pre-season tours that managed to get on pre-season tours, which I think will just help people out no end. As I say, it's you, I mean, maybe people sort of maybe some of us younger players thought that we sort of got sucked in by the fact that there was no signings coming in, maybe. So we thought maybe there was places for us, when really it was sort of a false, it was a false sense of security, you know. But yeah, it was a very like strange time for the club, I think, with what was going on. But it's something that helps you as a person and as a player because of the ups and downs of it. Yeah.
Yeah, when you had the you did have in the first few weeks, you had a few games, obviously, like starting in that three at the back as well. You had your first wins with the Wickham and the Huddersfield game.
Yeah.
How sort of satisfying was it to get, especially after that Huddersfield game, which was, you know, you started it, a pretty straightforward win in all respects. It was some of the best football we played that season. How satisfying was it to think, this is it, I've got a win under my belt now, that's it?
Yeah, no, that was a brilliant memory as well, was that game. That'd be probably up there with maybe my debut, and that were probably my best memories, and the Wickham game, I'd say. And I thought that's one of my better performances that I've had in the first team, that I was really pleased with, really, because I remember I was watching and we were really under the cosh in the first sort of 10-15 minutes, and Matt obviously got injured then, but I was looking from the outside thinking, cool, like the game was being played at some pace and they're really pressing us high. But then, yeah, as I come on, I think sometimes when a game is that quick and frantic at the start and you come into it as early as that, you just go off instinct, really. And maybe if a game's slower and a bit more laboured at the back or whatever, you might be prone to a mistake or something, but I think you just needed to be straight on it from the start in that one. But yeah, it was celebrating a goal as well. Celebrating goals when you're away, it's just a brilliant, brilliant feeling, because the sort of stadium goes silent, but you can just hear our fans, which I think is sort of something that I don't know, I never really thought of before I was playing as a player, but it's just such a brilliant feeling to know you're in someone's backyard sort of scoring against them, you know.
Well, it's that Seeds mentality sort of joy of it, isn't it? The fact, yeah, that you've gone there, and that, I suppose that's why as a fan, away days always have that sort of special element to it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the away following's brilliant that we get, and you can always hear the fans from start to finish and stuff, and especially when we're creating chances and scoring goals and winning games as well. It's brilliant. Yeah, there's no better feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when we're at a club, I mean, let's face it, our fans are, I would strongly argue, underrated when it comes to all things atmosphere, especially with Club 1871 as at the home games has now totally revamped the atmosphere at home. I think our fans we get sort of characterised as like a soft southern club, when they're not necessarily the reality.
Yeah, no, I take that personally as well when I see that on Twitter, people trying to batter our support and that. Since I was young, when people would say stuff like that, it would always hurt me inside to see that, yeah.
I suppose you've got to stop yourself as a professional from going on Twitter and giving it back.
Sometimes you have to bite your tongue, yeah.
That Wickham game you mentioned, did you ask to take a penalty in that? Did you think, oh, number eight, I'll be up here soon, sort of thing?
To be fair, I would have taken a penalty, obviously, if it had got to me, but I think I'd played for, was it the season before? I think it was the season before I'd played for the 23s in a playoff game and I'd missed the pen. So that was slightly in my head, which I don't know. I would have definitely taken a pen. I'd have stepped up confidently, but yeah, I'll leave that to the goal scorers, to be fair.
That's fair enough. And we had, during the season, we obviously had Mark Bowen and coming in for Jose Gomez. And Mark, I presume, was someone you know would have worked with to some extent, because he was at the club before he became manager. How did life as a defender change for you with that sort of managerial swap?
It was brilliant, to be fair. When him and Eddie came in, we hadn't sort of, obviously all managers have different ways of working, don't they? And with the manager before, we'd work a lot more on sort of patterns of play, and it would be more creating the chances and stuff and possession and stuff. But when Eddie came in, I remember his first session was like defending crosses, and it was really focused on the defenders and sort of your positioning when defending crosses. And I think from that, I could instantly, I instantly took so much from that, because we were doing sort of specific stuff with Eddie and the manager of like what positions you need to be in, body shapes, you shouldn't turn your back at this point and stuff. And for me as a youngster, I'm trying to take all those little things on as much as I can to improve me as a player. So yeah, since he's come in, I've loved the training and everything that he's been doing, really.
Yeah, because I suppose in a way, with Jose Gomez, you would class him maybe as a more technical manager. But yeah, the Reading, the club has always tried to stress that the academy players they already know how to play with the ball. Because yeah, would you describe yourself, you know, as a defender who is comfortable with the ball? Was that always drilled in you from an early age?
Yeah, I'd like to say definitely that's one of my qualities, is that I can play on the ball and stuff. But yeah, as you say, coming through the academy and stuff, you're taught that from a really early age, how to deal with the ball and how to pass the ball properly. Because yeah, everyone who comes through Reading should always have that sort of that backbone of being able to be good technically as a player, if nothing else, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's talk then, as you know, someone who's come through the academy while also, as you've said before, following the club home and away and everything like that. And it's a unique situation, really. We have hometown players in the dressing room before, and we've obviously had fans of the club in the dressing room as well. But do you, and I suppose whether there's any other players in the dressing room who are sort of like diehard fans, as it were, do you recount to your teammates in the dressing room tales of 106, tales of 2012, and sort of give them a bit of insight into that?
Yeah, definitely. There's sometimes comments that I'll make or whatever, or they'll ask me questions about, oh, Tom will know that, sort of thing. But yeah, they sometimes say, oh, would you shut up about that? You're always going on about that. But yeah, they're obviously just messing about. But yeah, I like to express like how much Reading means to me and that towards them as well, because Reading's always been a big part of my life, and if you're my friend as a person, then you should know that I'm a massive Reading fan and stuff, and that is something that is part of me. Yeah.
And where was your favourite spot to watch games then from the Madstad?
So originally I sat with my dad in the Upper West, but that was back when Y26 was jumping, and I always begged my dad to let me go over there and sit with them, but he always had his mates up in the Upper West, so he had a group of them that would always go, so he didn't want his movie season ticket. But sometimes me and my cousin would try and go under the barriers all the way round and actually sit in Y26. But sometimes you get stopped. You get from the west stand to the north stand, but then going round the back of the north stand and trying to get into the east stand, they'd stop you, and it's a bit more sort of cut off up where the drum is.
Yeah, well, that's where I sit, is up in that northeast corner. So I constantly see people going underneath the barrier and everything.
But I just love going to games when I was younger, yeah.
And as the away games as well, was that under the old star coaches and everything, or how would you always go about that?
Yeah, I love the star coaches, going on them. I sort of did that a bit more when I was a bit older, because obviously when I was a lot younger, my dad would take me or my sort of uncle or whatever. But I think actually my cousin used my season ticket so his mate wanted to go to a game with him a few years back, and I obviously didn't go, so he took my season ticket and got on the star coaches with my season ticket, but he was sick on the bus on the way back, so I think I'm banned. My season ticket's banned from the star coaches, which was quite funny when I heard that. But yeah, just going to away games and the buzz that you have. I remember when we went to Leicester away, when we went up, that was probably my best memory as an away day. And something that will stick with me for the rest of my life too was that day, because that was the best away day ever for me. Yeah.
And were you? I suppose this is a question of whether you were in the Upper West, because if you were, maybe not. For the, was it the Derby game and when in 2006 when we went the up as champions, and then the Nottingham Forest game in 2012. Were you one of the fans running on the pitch, or were you actually maybe stuck up in the gods?
So, to what I remember, I've invaded the pitch a few times, but I remember, I think it was the first time, the Derby one, the Derby one was when we went up, when it the first year we went up.
Yeah, yeah.
That one, I remember sat up in the Upper West with my dad. Everyone's invading the pitch, and I literally begged him to let me go. Just go under the barrier and then get on. And I remember saying, no, you're not going, you're not going. And he was really sort of, he was adamant that I wasn't going. And I remember just being so upset. And I think I was sat on my seat. They'd just been promoted, and I'm sat there crying because I wanted to go down and get on the pitch.
Little did you know that in a few years' time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So next time we got it, I looked at him and I was like, I'm not even listening to you. I'm going. and I've invaded it a few times. I remember because obviously the scholars all sit next to the dugout. I can't remember which game it was that we did an invasion, but I had my Reading kit on as well, and obviously David Dodds and stuff was sat to the left of the dugout. And I remember thinking, right, I've just got to keep my head down and not sort of go too far over to the dugout because they'll see me and they'll get annoyed. So I think I just sort of like ran towards the east stand and just sort of like tried to hide sort of thing. But no, they're great memories, yeah.
Yeah, because that, I suppose that 2012 one, I suppose, you know, both of us, or everyone obviously, was a bit older then. And yeah. when you are so young for that 2005-06 one, I remember being... You know, it almost felt like the norm that Reading just went and did this sort of crazy thing. But then as you get back to 2012, it kind of meant a little bit something different for fans of our age who think this is so much more of an achievement than you ever really realised maybe the 1-16 was.
Yeah, because my dad always reminds me of that, or like fans, like my dad's mates or whatever, or family, always remind me that throughout our, I don't know how old you are, but throughout my whole like life, all I've seen for Reading is just success, really. Apart from obviously a few relegations and that. Apart from that, it's just all been up, really. So, yeah, they say it hasn't been like this all the time, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I'm in my mid-20s, so I've been blessed, basically, one of the early...
Yeah.
I suppose, in a way, when I started, one of the first seasons that I started watching, we lost in the playoff semi-final to Wolves, so that kind of really set us up for for losing playoffs as a bit of a routine, that is. One other question I wanted to ask was, who of the ex players that you watched, obviously, during this time and as you're growing up, what of those ex players have you met now, and which ones have you been able to sort of, you know, get to talk to and have a word with that you used to look up to as a younger fan?
Who did I say? I met Stephen Hunt a few times, as well as Noel Hunt, and who else? Jem Karajan, Simon Church. I've met a few more, I think. But yeah, it's always strange when you meet ex players because you don't know how much they know about you, but you know everything about them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get that. Yeah,
which is really odd. You don't know whether they've been watching games or whatever, or whether they still follow as much. But no, it's great to. I still buzz off it, to be fair, seeing them, because I watched all of them growing up and stuff. And I think even when I was a bit younger, I remember James Harper like trained with us a few times in the Dome as a youngster, and that again was brilliant to see someone that you've watched for so long and training with you. Yeah.
Yeah, you never forget your childhood heroes, and in a way for you as well. I would say that from my experience, because you're effectively on the other end of that now, and even for someone who, you know, you've only at the stage had a handful of games, and you're obviously early in your career, but you're already someone, I would say, that's made quite a big impact with fans, and someone that, you know, you are the person now that people go up and want to take photos with and everything.
Yeah, it's always strange when people say that. And it's like my mum and dad say, like, you need to go down and watch the like younger lads play and stuff, and go back to the academy and watch them play. And I have done a few times, but I always walk up thinking, like, I think it feels wrong. It feels wrong in a sense, because I sit there and think, when I was that age, I would have buzzed off it if anyone came to watch me play.
Hmm.
But I always do it and think, are they thinking the same thing, or they just think, what's this lad doing coming to watch me play, sort of thing, you know? But yeah, it's surreal, really, that people look at me that way. Yeah, it's strange, but I love it all the same. Yeah,
no, of course. And a few just final couple of thoughts before I let you go then. Thanks very much for coming on the podcast tonight. I know it's been something we've been trying to get in the works for a little while, so it is massively appreciated. And
yeah, no worries,
man. As we get into hopefully now, what, we're end of May, so maybe we're playing within a few weeks or a month or so now, what's it what's this sort of mean to you now to get towards the end of the season and to see out the year?
Yeah, I think I said today, I did an interview today with the guys at Reading and they asked me a similar question. But it's like the start of a new season, these games coming up, because at the start of a new season, anything can happen and you'll see some strange results. And I think we've got as good a chance as anyone of pushing for those playoff spots, really. So yeah, I'm massively optimistic about the games ahead and stuff. Hopefully we can all get it going again. But yeah, it's just about doing all we can to keep fit and training hard at the same intensity that we would be throughout the season to be ready for when that first game comes around. But yeah, it's going to be obviously a tough period because there's going to be a lot of games within a short period and then sort of straight into the next season. But yeah, everyone's in the same boat and doing the same thing. So I think we'll smash it, yeah.
I suppose that's a good thing for you as well, that the games come thick and fast and as many opportunities as possible. My last question really is that it must be a bit strange to think of playing in empty stadiums and everything like that, especially at championship level and everything. But how much are you looking forward to, whether it's, you know, October, January, whenever, to have the fans back in the stadium and to kind of feel like we've, you know, got back to, you know, that brilliant sense that probably we all took for granted of having fans in stadiums football, but to have it back now, it's going to feel pretty special, isn't it?
Oh, for sure, yeah. I haven't actually, obviously haven't played behind closed doors in a league game yet, but I've been watching a bit of the Bundesliga and stuff, and it seems really odd watching it without any fans, and you can hear the players sort of talking and stuff. And yeah, it does make you realise that football isn't anything without the fans, really. So yeah, I think, yeah, I can't wait to have everyone back in and stuff and enjoying the football and stuff. I think it'll be a massive boost to everyone, yeah.
Absolutely. We're certainly counting down the days to when that is. But in the meantime, thank you very much for coming on, Tom. It's been a pleasure talking to you and best of luck for the rest of the season.
Yeah, no worries, mate. Thanks very much for having me.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.